Happy Writer. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and to help authors find more joy in their writing. I am your host, Marissa Meyer. Thank you all so much for joining me today. What is making me happy this week? You guys, I don't even know where to begin. I am overflowing with joy this week. Okay, where do I start this story? I think it was the last episode where I talked about these honey butter chips from Korea that I was like super into, and that my mom and I had gotten a bunch of Korean snacks because she is a huge, huge fan of the K-pop band BTS. And we were going to be having a little get together to watch the American Music Awards and cheering on BTS because they were nominated for 3 awards. Spoiler, if you didn't see it, they swept them and won them all. Woohoo! Anyway, what happened during that little get together of ours? It comes up that BTS, while they were in America, decided to have a series of concerts down in Los Angeles. And I have been telling my mom for the last couple of years, since this obsession of hers kind of started to grow, that, hey, if they ever start touring again, I don't care where we have to fly, I will take you to see BTS in concert. So super last minute, I got us tickets and booked us a flight. And a couple of nights ago, my mom and I flew down to LA and went and hung out with the army and saw BTS in concert. And it was amazing. I am like shaking as I'm talking about this. It was the best concert. It was so fun. Everyone we met was just so kind and delightful and excited. My mom cried like it was the best and just pure, pure, pure joy. So, of course, I had a great time seeing them live, but seeing how happy it made my mom is like the highlight of my year. So that's all. I have no more words, but it was just so exciting. Okay, what else? Of course, I am also so happy to be talking to today's guest. A graduate of Northwestern University, she has worked as a legal writer, a freelance editor, and an editorial intern. She also builds props and armor for cosplay and writes storylines for LARP games. Her debut science fiction novel, City of Shattered Light, came out this past October. Please welcome Claire Wynn.
Hey, Marissa, thank you so much for inviting me on. This is such an honor to be here. I adored the book Cinder. I cannot believe we're coming up on 10 years.
And
what the heck? And I'm also super excited to read Gilded. Huge congrats on that. And having a billboard in Times Square, which is so exciting.
Well, thank you. This is supposed to be your interview, but why?
I know, but I'm excited to be here.
I have to start. So I've heard of them. Do you say LARP or do you say LARP?
We say LARP.
It's okay. Easier. I thought so, but I've never actually played them. And I was like, I could be committing a huge faux pas right now.
No, you're great.
Thank you for joining me. It was really fun because today is Cyborg Monday. For people who've been following me on socials for a long, long time, every Monday after Thanksgiving, which is like Cyber Monday, but my publisher tries to do a Cyborg Monday series of promotions. And it was cool for me to be, you know, preparing for this interview because your book that we're going to be talking about has cyborgs in it. And it's like, it's so relevant. Yes. So before we get to talking about your debut novel, I first want to hear about your origin story. How did you know you wanted to be a writer, or what were the steps that brought you to this place?
Thanks. Yeah, it's a little hard to pinpoint when I decided to give the author thing a try. I've always been a creator, whether it was art or theater or cosplay, and I've always had stories in my head, but it always seemed mortifyingly vulnerable to ever put them on a page where other people might read them or where they might seem silly. And I just never put them down. I didn't even write fanfic. Everything stayed in my head for such a long time. Then in college, I was aiming for law school. I chose history as my major, and I was taking lots of classes in medieval lit, war studies, Renaissance studies. I would use these as daydream fuel for my fantasy worlds. And it wasn't until my senior year that I decided I kind of didn't want to sink further into debt and throw more years of my life at law school. I wasn't sure where I'd end up, but my first job was unexpectedly doing legal writing. And as I was working that job, I started putting down a fantasy story just as an escape. It took me about a year and a half to write the first draft. Part of the inspiration for that book was me being frustrated over the treatment of one of my favorite video game characters in this big release video game. It was called Metroid Other M, and I loved Samus as a character, and I felt that they did her dirty. I wanted her to be angry and stoic and vengeful. Instead, she seemed passive and whiny and doting over her superior officer. So that became the catalyst for my first main character, and I wrote a fantasy story, and it took a while. I ended up doing a lot more world building than expected. I put it past a few of my friends who were big fantasy fans, and they encouraged me to publish it. They said, "This is great. You should try for it." The book did not end up getting me an agent, but I learned a lot about the types of stories I enjoyed reading and writing. I learned about publishing as an industry. I connected with other aspiring authors who become my critique partners. And eventually I wrote City of Shattered Light. This is the book that got me an agent and a book deal. And it is a book that almost broke me. It forced me to unlearn and then relearn how to write. And I'm really happy that it's out now.
Nice. So does that make it your second completed novel? Or did you have others in between that first fantasy?
City of Shattered Light was my second.
Okay. I love that. I also started with fantasy, like high fantasy, and thought for sure, like my first, I don't even know how many novels I attempted to write that were high fantasy, you know, epic quests and dungeons and dragons and like all of that. And when I got the idea for the Lunar Chronicles and suddenly I was writing science fiction, I was like, where did this come from? This isn't at all what I thought I was going to write. So on that, would you please tell listeners a little bit about your debut novel? What is City of Shattered Light about?
So City of Shattered Light is a young adult cyberpunk sci-fi about an heiress who flees home to save her test subject sister, and she crash lands in the most dangerous city in the galaxy and has to fall in with a queer found family of smugglers to escape a bloodthirsty artificial intelligence that is locking down their city. And readers have compared it to Aurora Rising and Six of Crows, Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's a lot of fun.
I love those comparisons. To me, I got a lot of Firefly vibes from it, which is like one of my favorite sci-fi worlds, stories, everything. I just love Firefly. And I just I felt like I was back in that show again, reading this book.
Aw, that's really high compliment. Thank you.
I mean, it is so, this book is very theatrical. It is one of those books that you can totally envision being on the big screen. So I'm not at all surprised that people have been comparing it to these huge epic sci-fi sagas. For you, like, what were some of the big influences that were driving the story?
It definitely has. I wanted to combine a bit of an old school cyberpunk feel with technologies that I feel will become relevant in the future. So I'd say that the cinematics were not as much influenced by media that I knew as much as the character dynamics. I would say that video games like BioWare games influenced the way that I saw the team dynamics playing out. And well, as for the aesthetics, I would say that Marvel movies did play a role in the way that I envisioned the fight scenes. Games like Mass Effect inspired how I would think about building the worlds, the nightclubs, the space stations, etc. So a lot of video games, anime, cinematics did influence the way that I thought about the book and the world and how I would determine which details could make it onto the page.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a perfect lead into the first thing that I wanted to talk to you about, which is world building. It is a really phenomenal world. The first time when one of our two main characters, Asa, like shows up in this city and is walking through this like gritty dangerous, like underbelly city on this, you know, far-flung moon. It's so immersive, you know, it's you're describing these great, you know, lights and billboards and, you know, the people, the smells, all of it. So for you, like, talk me through your world building process, both as it relates to like those small, those nitty gritty details that just put us right there, but also like, how are you balancing that with the larger things? Cause we also have history at play here. We have politics at play here. Like, how were you forming this world as you were writing?
That's a really big question.
It is a really big question. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's great.
I was asking, break it up, Marissa. This is too much to throw.
That's great. I have a few different things that I could touch on with that. So there were a few real world inspirations there. Part of it was my experience studying abroad in Europe during my college years and feeling a little bit out of place when I would travel alone and getting lost a few times in cities where I did not speak the language. Part of it was going to New York City with friends. So a few of my own experiences are in there. So what I would do initially, before I even started bringing the plot together, it was a lot of daydreaming. I was thinking, what would be some really fascinating parts of the city that could be explored? And I would just make, I had a huge document with different areas of the city, what they could contain. Most of them didn't make it into the story, but they really helped to flesh this place out in my head. And as far as bringing it onto the page, it was a really complicated process because I have a few rules that I like to stick to personally for world building. And one of those is that I want everything to unfold through the main character's point of view. So only the things that they would be seeing and thinking about in the scene are going to make it onto the page. And the other thing is knowing one layer deeper than is going to make it into the story. So having the timelines and putting everything together, preferably after the first draft, when I have an idea of where I need the story to be and how I need the world to serve the story and vice versa, then I can fill in all those details later. So I have documents that I'll use, and not everything is going to make it onto the story. I'm not going to ever put everything onto the page because I think it feels more immersive when readers only see glimpses of the bigger picture once in a while, when they own, it gives them the idea that there is more here than meets the eye. And I think that if you keep the story flowing just by feeding those little details once in a while, that helps the immersion a lot. And the other thing that I did, which was heavily inspired by video games, one reason that I love RPGs and big AAA games is that there are whole teams of people that work on bringing these worlds to life. Every little detail, there's graphic design, there is CGI, there's music, there's research. There's so many different people whose ideas and creativity go into making those worlds that you get to explore in the video game. And what I look at when I'm in these worlds playing is, how do these details pop out to me? Which of these details are going to make this world more real in my mind? And how do I translate something like that to the pages of a book? So video games were a big inspiration for how I think about world building. And yeah, a lot of moving parts.
No, it is. It is absolutely a lot of moving parts. How much did you plan going into this story?
I had an idea of what I wanted to do. Like, the primary concept, of course, was I had this monster taking over technology. What's the scariest place you could be when you have someone after you who can corrupt and control anything? And it was, in my mind, a city you're unfamiliar with, very high-tech city with tons of technology that can be taken over, and a place where it is the sole city on this entire planetary body, on this moon. So I started there, and I had an idea of where I wanted the character arcs to go. And once the first draft was written, I started to see places where I needed to develop more. I had all of these underworld figures popping up, and so many of them were female. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to gender swap a few. They can't all be female. Or can they?
So Or can they? Why can't they?
Exactly. So it became matriarchal, and I had to think of, okay, what's the history behind this? Why would they be matriarchal culturally? And that was fun, figuring that out. So yeah, I would say a lot of the history, the explanation, the deeper world building will come after I have a a pretty good sketch of how I want the plot, pacing, and the character arcs in the story.
No, that makes sense. And it is, I mean, the world itself is so complex, but I can see how it falls very naturally into the story that you're telling. And everything you just said, like, makes so much sense as far as where the characters have to go and what sort of setting is going to feed into that. And it really, you know, just kind of blended together really beautifully.
Well, thank you.
Were there any like details or like things that you knew about the world that you really wanted readers to know, but you just couldn't figure out how to work it in, that you were like sad to have to leave out?
Oh, there was actually, I really hope that I get to publish the second book, because there is definitely more that I want to explore about Requiem.
I was definitely going to be asking about that.
Yeah, the history of the alien civilization that came before, and like the history of Requiem and details as to how those details played into what Requiem is today. I had more of that that I just did not have the word count to explore. Yeah. So I really hope that I will get to share that with you, because I do have more thought of in that region.
Oh my gosh, I hope you will too. You know, it's one of those books that it can be a complete standalone story, but you leave us in an obvious place where there is the story is not over. And I hope that you get to publish the next one, because I want to know what happens.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah, it was, I got my contract during like the height of all the pandemic layoffs and shutdowns. And the editor that had pitched my book to Acquisitions was unfortunately laid off. The editor I ended up working with was amazing. But it was also, I think they were reluctant to pick up more than one book at the time. So my sequel's always been an option book. It would depend on how City of Shattered Light did and whether or not they wanted to take it. But as soon as I finished my developmental edits, I was like, I am probably more immersed in this book than I'm ever going to be again. I know pretty much how the story is not going to be changing. So I can just write the sequel. I've had these ideas in my head for too long, so I just did it just for me. And it's out there, it's written, and we'll see what happens with it.
What a tease! You can't say that it's out there and it's written and then be like, but you may not ever get to read it.
Oh, well, yeah, I know, we'll see. I don't know. It's like, I wanted to do these characters justice. I feel like I owe it to them to at least finish their stories, even if it doesn't make it into every reader's hands. I'm pretty determined, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I understand that when you are immersed and like inspired to write this story, you can't just turn away from that. You have to kind of follow where inspiration goes. So I'm obviously hoping that your publisher gives you the green light and this next sequel gets published. If they don't, like, do you have a plan? Do you think you'll self-publish, or like, would try to find a way to get it out there for readers?
I would hope so. I haven't thought too far ahead, but I really just want to say, hey, it exists. I want to find a way to get it to readers. So we'll see.
Yeah.
And yeah.
No, that makes sense. And I guess I'll wait to see where things go, but that's very, I mean, it's gotta be kind of refreshing to know that it's done in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that it was part of the reason I was having a little bit of trouble immersing myself in other manuscripts for a while now, is because this story keeps dragging me back in. It's like, I don't want to interfere with ideas that I would have to potentially finish this series. It's like, I just want to get it done. I want to get these ideas out there so I can move on with my life.
Yeah, no, I understand that entirely. It's when something is knocking at the door, it is really hard to ignore. Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit about technology as a part of your world building. And I wanted to dig into that, especially because, I mean, it is full of technology. And you use a lot of like specialty lingo, you know, made up lingo for the world that you've built. And yet it never felt confusing. Like, as a reader, I felt like I was able to follow along and understand, I mean, not really understand how the technology works, but like I got it and it worked. And I know from personal experience that it can be really hard writing about technology that your readers aren't necessarily familiar with, that don't exist yet. How did you go about tackling that challenge?
I find that the best way to make something digestible for readers is if you understand it well enough to break it down on a simpler level. And I'm not saying that I understand anything about electricity or coding, but I did have a really basic working knowledge of a few of the technologies that I wanted to explore, because my day job involves legal writing for a lot of foreign engineers and scientists who are applying for US visas. So I talk a little bit about their research, their fields, why it's important. So that's, I use basic knowledge of a number of fields as a jumping off point to look into, okay, what does the future of brain tech interfaces look like? What does the future of electrical engineering look like? And that was a good place to start. But where I got really lucky was that I have a few friends who are in tech industries who I could actually bounce my ideas off of. Mm. And that was so helpful, because I think that there is a limit to how much research you can do on your own before you need to say, hey, how do I bridge the gap between this technology and this scene where I want to use it? So I had an electrical engineer friend who is great about talking about EMPs with me and how those would factor in the scenes where I wanted to use them. Another friend who is a computer scientist who I talked to about what Banshee could ostensibly do, what you can do with hacking and control of IoT technologies. And another friend who is a neuropsychologist who talked me through a little bit about brains. So it was really good to have that support too.
Okay, so where are you hanging out that you're making all of these friends?
LARP. There are so many nerds at LARP. You have no idea.
That makes so much sense. I need to immerse myself in something new. I need these friends too. I want to talk especially about obstacles, as far as, you know, throwing obstacles in the path of your protagonist. This book, it is nonstop, fast-paced action all the way through. We've got these poor characters. They're fighting off bounty hunters. There's mob bosses. There's people trying to kill them to collect their organs. There's this, you know, artificial intelligence virus thing. There's a mad scientist. There's a life-threatening disease. There's ex-boyfriends. There's alien monsters, like things just popping out at them every step of the way, which does not at all make it feel like it's not a crowded book. Everything makes sense. But I was just like on the edge of my seat all the way through, because they were just never given a break. So talk to me a little bit about your plotting, but specifically, how do you kind of come up with different things that you're going to be able to throw into the path of your characters? And how do you kind of pick and choose what you're going to do there?
That's a hard one, because a lot of it comes from gut feelings as I'm moving through the first few drafts. I've found that I'm a combination of plotter and pantser. I can't plot more than like 2 or 3 chapters ahead, even if I know the general arc of the story. If I know the big climactic scenes, the big character choices at the end, there's still a lot of figuring out that comes in between. So what I do when I'm initially plotting, like draft zero, is a lot of fun scenes that I think would be great to work in. Scenes that I think would help to flesh out the characters, to flesh out the world, just conflicts that I find exciting. And then as I'm going, I start to think, okay, what order can I put these in that makes sense? How can I direct this scene so that it might connect to this scene in the future? And stuff does get cut along the way, some scenes that I regrettably don't get to include, but a lot of it is piecing stuff together that I already have in mind and then trying to connect them in a way that plausibly makes sense. The plot comes a little bit later to me once I know how things might plausibly fit together later.
Interesting. I would have paid you as a plot first writer just because this is such a plot heavy book.
Yeah, I don't know how my brain works. It's funny.
How does anybody?
I know. I did have obviously the big few concepts in mind. I knew that it was going to be the virus taking over. And actually, the main premise started with the thought of the virus taking over technology, which I mentioned earlier. But the other big piece was just this weird vision I had, I guess. It was a scene where there was a runaway space princess on a rickety transit ship. She had something in her backpack. It was an alien heart. And I was like, how did she get here? What's she running from? What's in her backpack? And I was thinking, okay, it's a piece of her sister. Who did this to her sister? And all these awful possibilities came to mind. That chapter is still in the book, but it's like chapter 6 now. That used to be where it started. But a lot of it was me trying to figure out, okay, how do we get to this point? What's going to happen next? So it was a lot of pantsing from that point, but I did kind of direct the earlier chapters toward that chapter when I started.
I love that. I love hearing like inspiration stories and like, what was the one weird thing that you were like, I have to turn this into a story. And that one is pretty epic.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with where it went.
Let's talk a little bit about writing romance, because there's a few different kind of romance storylines happening over the course of this book. And I know that it can be really, I mean, romance is difficult enough to write, period. It's especially hard to write when people are like constantly running for their lives. Mm-hmm. How did you work it in?
Yeah, that's a hard one. But I always intended the story to be centered on the platonic relationship. So obviously at its core, it is Asa and her sister and her desperation to save her. And then Riven and Ty, who is kind of like her brother, Riven and the rest of her crew. And it's very much a found family story, but the romance came in because the story was very much about Asa and Riven and how their lives intertwined and how they're just different people, but they learn to rely on and trust each other, even though they're from completely different worlds. So as they started to trust each other, the romance threaded with that. And Asa and Ty were more of we're two people who are running for our lives and we just are looking for someone to cling to while everything's kind of collapsing around us. So I think that it was part of it was a spur of the moment for the characters. And part of it was thinking about how characters might interact when they're on the run and in this uncertain scenario.
Mm-hmm. No, that I can see there's, okay. So it's like, for the record, there's some really steamy kissing scenes. And it's like, it makes sense when you think like how the emotions are just skyrocketing all the time, you know, just that, just the adrenaline constantly going and how that would just, you know, lead to some really good kissing.
Yeah. That's the hope.
Want to fall in love? Get chased by cyborgs.
Yeah, exactly.
What about writing action scenes? Because you've got a lot of them. For me, I'm less intimidated now, but for a long time, action scenes were like my nemesis when it came to writing. I just found them so intimidating. And like all of the things that you would have to be thinking about and balancing and trying to keep it really fast paced, but also keep it clear so the reader doesn't get lost in the action. And they were just always something that I thought were really difficult to do. And I still do. They're still, to me, one of the biggest challenges. I'm just not as scared of them as I used to be. But for you, like, do you enjoy writing action scenes? Do you have a strategy for how you go about writing them? Or do you just kind of like free write and see what comes up? Like, how do you tackle them?
So action sequences, I think, come more naturally to me than a lot of other scenes.
Because when you're a gamer, this is another game.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I think that's very much a part of it, is I tend to visualize scenes pretty well in my head. And I like to think about, okay, and this ties into LARP too, if we're going to get really nerdy. So it's like, okay, what is it like being in combat? What is it like feeling the scene when you don't have time to actively strategize every moment when you have things coming at your face and you don't really have the time to react with your strategy brain. Sometimes it's instinct kicking in, and you know, this sounds really dorky, but there's a lot happening during an action sequence. I like to think about how the scenery can be used with the characters. I like to think about what the main character moment happening during the action sequence is. Like, what is it? Like, it has to have a purpose in my mind. It has to be it's not just a character showing off how cool they are. It has to mean something in the story going forward. And I use a lot of music to help me get in the mindset. I have experience with video games, obviously. And I think about, okay, what would look really cool? How do I translate to the page? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that actually makes sense. I'm trying to remember, there's someone I talked to a long time ago, and I can't think who it was, but I remember them saying that when they were writing like hand-to-hand combat, they would go watch like Mortal Kombat videos on YouTube. And I was like, that is brilliant. Like, just, you can just kind of copy, you know, punch, kick, flip, you know?
Yeah, visualizing really helps.
Mm-hmm. Do you play music while you're writing? And how much does the music you choose change from like action scene to like quieter, you know, romance scenes or whatever?
I use music a lot when it comes to inspiration. Sometimes a song will come up and I'll think, this is really exciting to me. How do I make a scene that evokes the feeling in readers that this music is evoking in me right now? And sometimes music will inspire part of a setting or just like an era of tension. Like, how do I make a scene that feels like this song feels? And when I get into a rhythm and where I know the overall tone of a scene, then I can switch to music that's a little bit more low key, a little bit more repetitive that I can just throw on repeat one day as I'm writing. But music does really help me with scene setting and discovering characters and emotions and how those fit into a story.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done it in a long time, but there was a time when I would put on video game music, like specifically during fight scenes.
Yes.
And that was kind of like back when I was writing the Lunar Chronicles. And I remember how helpful that could be just to like be in that really intense headspace. Do you have any games or soundtracks that you like particularly recommend?
Lately, this didn't come out until after I had City of Shattered Light like done and dusted, but Cyberpunk 2077 came out last year and I love the vibe of that soundtrack. It's a combination of a lot of songs that they had made specifically for in the game that are playing on the clubs and playing on the club radios and in your car when you're driving. And then the actual ambience has a really gritty synthy feel to it that I think is super cool. Otherwise, I really like the soundtracks for Dragon Age, Mass Effect, which are some of my favorite RPGs. Mass Effect has that far-flung space feel. Dragon Age is quintessential fantasy.
Awesome. So many recommendations. I'm feeling like, okay, I have to go figure out a fight scene to write so I can test this out.
Yeah.
I also want to talk to you about villains. There's a number of them in this book. They are all so unique, so completely different from one another. I think Morfett is probably like my new bounty hunter idol. She is so cool. I absolutely love her. You should do a cosplay of her because
she's fun.
Amazing. How do you go about creating villains? What are some things that you're thinking of?
So I think about villains in a similar way as I do the main characters. It's a little piece of me, something that I understand, but maybe taken a little bit too far. And Morfett is really interesting, I think, because she is a little bit of a power fantasy in some ways. She's like this tiny woman that everyone just knows not to mess with. She has a reputation. She's a lot like Riven, but she doesn't have a crew. She works completely alone. She's totally unflappable all the time. And that's one thing that makes her terrifying. And so she was a lot of fun to write. I've had a lot of really positive comments about her so far. Asa's dad is the kind of person who's doing what he thinks is right. He is powerful. And in some ways, like, there's the suspicion that, you know, maybe he is a good dad. Maybe he is giving her a lot as her dad. And she does owe him a lot, but he's also doing a lot of stuff that is unethical. So there's always the push-pull of like, are they really a terrible person? And I think it is important to have qualities in villains that you and readers can all identify with and take those to the next level. And something has gotten corrupted in there somehow.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to think about it. You know, how do you take something that's not necessarily evil or wicked, and how do you corrupt that? I like that. Okay, last thing that I wanted to ask you, way, way, way back at the start of this interview, when you were first talking about this book and writing this book, you said something to the effect of that it broke you.
Oh.
And I'm curious about that. I thought that it would become clear during our conversation, but it hasn't become clear. What broke you about this book? And then what did you do about it?
So this was the book that I wrote after getting pretty solidly rejected by agents for my first book. And so I was in the mindset that a lot was riding on this book and I had to do everything right. And I had learned a little bit more about the industry and a little bit more about writing. And I had changed up my writing style a little bit. I had tried to write this book in first person. It was ASA only. And then I ended up being like, nope, I can't do it. It has to be multi POV. There's just too much interesting contrast between them. And what happened was the first agent I submitted to, who became my agent, sent me a revise and resubmit. And she ended up making some really good points. I was not starting the book in the right place. I had mentioned that it originally started with that vision of ASA on the transit ship, but that was where the story started. And obviously, they're looking back, there's way too much that happens before that point to make it remotely viable to start there. So I had to go back and dig in and pretty much rebuild the two main characters from the ground up by figuring out more about their backstories. And there was so much that went into that revision. I also had to deepen my POV, which I was not doing enough in my first book. So I had to learn more about deep character POV. And I was doing all of this in just a few months for this revise and resubmit. And just that combined with feeling the pressure, I was like, can I do this? If I can do this, then it means I can write. If not, then I don't know what I'm going to do next. So that was a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. So if it had not sold and you had come away from it feeling like, oh my gosh, I just put everything into this book and it still didn't happen, like any thoughts on where you would have headed next?
I think I would have come back to writing. I think it would have probably just been a temporary, oh, well, this didn't work out. But I think I would have found some way to tell stories, even if it took me a lot longer.
Yeah,
I think it's important to, like, if you're a creative, it stays in your blood. I don't think it ever really goes away.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I have had friends who have given up, but then they always seem to come back to it. Mm-hmm. what would you say to someone who is working on their novel and they've received a revise and resubmit from an agent and they are just feeling so much pressure to get it right? What would you say to them?
I would say that only do the revision if you feel it's in line with your vision for the story. If the agent is asking you to do something that doesn't feel right to you, or that doesn't, if it makes it into something that isn't the story you want to tell, then that's probably not the agent for you. And there will always be other opportunities. You will continue to get better as a writer, even if this isn't the book that breaks you in. And you will always have other stories in you. You will always find another book of your heart as you continue to grow as a person and have new experiences. So don't be so stressed. Do what feels right to you and keep creating.
Wonderful words of wisdom. Are you ready for our bonus round?
Sure.
All right. Requiem or Cortellian?
Probably Requiem. I'd probably die, but it would be worth it.
See, I would totally be Cortellian. It's corrupt, clearly, but it just seems a lot more comfortable there.
That's true.
Spaceship or giant mech?
Ooh, probably spaceship. I think spaceship is exploration. It's comfier and can hang out with your friends there.
If City of Shattered Light had a theme song, what would it be?
Oh, I had a few things in mind for this. Scandroid has a song, Neo Tokyo, the Dance with the Dead remix was a, it really has the vibe of the setting of Requiem, I think. And that was one of the songs that I was listening to as I was world building initially.
What is your favorite writing snack or beverage?
Oh boy. I eat a lot of fruit snacks, and I know that's weird. But
like the little gummies?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm an adult. I shouldn't, but
I know my kids love those.
And coffee or tea. I like both of them when I'm writing. And yeah.
How do you celebrate an accomplishment?
Boy, buying new video games or books, usually.
What is one small thing that brings you a lot of joy?
Going on solitary runs out in the country, just running in the woods alone and having time to sort through my thoughts.
What book makes you happy?
Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson is one of my favorites. It is part heist book. It is part found family book. It has such impeccable world building that is balanced with character development and action. And it's one of my favorites.
We kind of talked about this already, but you might have something that hasn't come up yet. What are you working on next?
I have a few ideas for adult fantasy books. One of them is a science fantasy with monster hunting and a queer polyam monster hunter squad, which is a lot of fun. And I'm excited to work on that one. And then I have another one that's a dark fantasy that's been in the works for a while. We'll see if I can keep making headway on that.
Lastly, where can people find you?
I'm mostly on Instagram and Twitter. My Instagram is Claire Wynn Author. My Twitter is atomic_pixie because I'm stubborn and haven't changed it. I'm also on TikTok sometimes. I sometimes give writing advice, talk about my book and updates. So that's Claire Wynn Author as well.
Awesome. Claire, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Marissa. This was really great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Readers, definitely check out City of Shattered Light. It is available now. Of course, we always encourage you to support your local indie bookstore if you can. If you don't have a local indie, you can check out our affiliate store at bookshop.org/shop/Marissa Meyer. Next week will be our last episode of 2021. And in it, I will be talking to Chelsea Bobulski about her 4-book holiday series, All I Want for Christmas. If you're enjoying these conversations, please subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. Until next time, stay healthy, stay cozy, and whatever life throws at you today, I do hope that now you're feeling a little bit happier.